full of cinematic garbage. One man will be your filter. Welcome to Movies Worth Seeing with your host, Michael Piccinieri.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Oz Culture Podcast. I am joined for this episode by the lovely Denise Chan.
Hello everybody.
And today we are, I don't know what the fuck to do with this review, to be honest. I don't know what the fuck I just watched.
You're still digesting, aren't you?
I'm still processing. I mean, this movie was like a funeral. Like, I need a week or something to process what I'm going through emotionally. This episode, we are going to be reviewing Anything, Everywhere, All at Once, which...
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
It really is Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I've never watched a film that nailed the fucking title more than this film did. There is no false advertising here, that is for sure. The only thing they could have added is Anything, Everywhere, All at Once. Including epileptic seizures. Oh, man. Denise, let's play a little game.
Yes.
Let's take turns at saying what this film is like.
All right, would you like to go first?
Sure. I mean, I've already said a few, but all right, I'll say another one. This film is like doing drugs for the first time when you don't know what the drugs are. Or this film is like doing a bad bag of cocaine, maybe?
Maybe.
A bad batch of heroin.
Oh, man.
Your turn, Denise.
For some reason, I can't get the word kaleidoscope out of my mind. It feels like a kaleidoscope of intergenerational trauma, of family, of chaos, and hope at the end of the day.
Ooh, hope, eh? Mm. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't expecting hope.
Mm, I'm excited to unpack.
I feel like this film is, if I want to know what it's like to be a father, I feel like this film can kind of give me the chaotic feeling as if I have children. Like, by the end of this movie, I was like, where are they? Where are my children?
Somewhere existing in the multiverse, definitely.
I do find it interesting that this film came out the exact same time as a film like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Denise, you've seen Multiverse of Madness. I haven't seen Multiverse of Madness yet. I will see it and I will review it at some point, though. I do promise that. But this film feels like five movies in one film. With all different directions. Yet somehow it was still easier to understand than Inception.
I can't comment because I still haven't seen Inception.
It's fine. You've missed the boat, Denise. It's only been about 10 years since the film came out. True that. I don't think you're going to watch it.
That's interesting. Why is that? Why do you think it's on?
I think it's because this film just has a lot of exposition dumps that somehow were complicated but not, like, or maybe I just, like, went into full baby mode at one point and was just like, ooh, there's pretty colors, and just shut my brain off and shut off to this idea that I could understand what the fuck this movie was. But anyway, let's get into the plot. Unless, Denise, you have something else that you want to say this film was like.
It feels definitely like a feast rather than just a meal or the whole buffet. I don't know to put it plainly. It's just like, it's a whole lot. And this is my second time watching it as well, actually. And I feel that I definitely enjoyed it a lot still, but it's helped me kind of understand or grasp even further what I think I got the first time but hadn't fully absorbed yet. So
you actually enjoyed this more the second time?
You know what? In a way, maybe, because I feel like the first time, because it was just so much happening, even just like emotionally with all the depth that they explore in the relationships, it felt like I had to hold everything in because I could feel all my own like personal trauma coming up.
I thought you were going to say you could feel your intestines drop out of your body or something.
In an emotional sense, absolutely. And I think this time around, just having the time to process it a bit more, read the interviews, read about what other people are thinking of it, about the core message and everything, it's kind of like this time I could just experience it rather than feel like I was in a constant state of wonder, which is, I think, what I was like in the first time I watched it.
There was definitely states of wonder at certain points. I think when nothing was like on the screen, like there were moments of wonder for me where like in the chaos, in the sea of all this chaos, when shit started to slow down and was normal again, I was like, oh, I can breathe now.
Yeah. They definitely didn't play it safe, I think, with everything they did.
No, they did.
Very interesting.
That is, they definitely didn't play it safe. I feel like they should have a doctor outside the cinema to just check people's pulse after watching that. Like, there was a moment when the movie finished and we were like waiting for the lights to come on and they were taking forever to come on. It was almost like that was part of the movie. Like, psych, movie's still going. Like, this movie does this funny, not funny thing, but this movie does this thing where it writes like it's got part one, part two, part three. And there was a moment when part two came up, because I felt like the movie was about to end and wrap up. There were like five times where I thought this movie was going to wrap up and end, and it didn't end. Now, one thing that was really interesting watching this movie, seeing Jamie Lee Curtis get old, my childhood can't accept it, because I just think to myself, like, wow, this is the same woman that supplied an endless supply of erections for me as a child. Like, True Lies, man, the erotic dance was, like, before, obviously, being a young kid, before the internet was big and porn was around, like, that was it. That was my thing. Anyway.
Many a sexual awakening, I think, watching her in that.
You know, it's funny, though, in acting school, like, yeah, whenever we had to, like, learn how to seduce someone or whatever, our teacher would always come back to, watch Jamie Lee Curtis in True Lies. That's how you seduce. Mm. He's not wrong. Anyway, Jamie Lee Curtis is different now. She's all over this movie. She's fucking great in this movie.
She's fantastic.
And they gave her some kind of fat suit or something, yeah, to really accentuate that she's old. And like, I feel like her real body isn't like that because she seems quite fit and healthy. But yeah. What a crazy movie this was. Denise, I'm going to let you take, take over as someone who's seen this movie a second time.
Yeah.
Just allow me to process my emotions while you, yeah, take over.
No worries, man. I mean, yeah, gosh, what a big experience the first time watching it was, which I'm sure you're experiencing all now, all at once. What a wild ride. Like, I think watching it the first time, because, I mean, I was saying this to you earlier about how it feels like now that more diverse stories are getting told, we're seeing this trend where they really are delving into generational trauma as a shared experience of, like, yeah, finally you can see, you know, what you may have experienced in real life on screen, and that hits you on a representative level quite deep. And I thought the fun thing with this film is that it takes that, but then it goes through such beautiful, like, chaotic hoops and bounds that it makes it still feel fresh and new. I think you said that too, but how it made it still feel like a more unique kind of concept rather than just following the trend.
Yeah, like, this film at its core is about, like, a torn relationship between a mother and daughter.
Yeah.
And one of the things we were talking about was how this film actually has a lot of similarities to another film that me and Denise reviewed, Turning Red, disguised through this wacky, supernatural, over-the-top story of a woman turning a little girl into a panda. At the core of it was this relationship between mother and daughter, and this relationship where the mother wasn't really accepting her daughter fully and was kind of pushing her to be someone she's not and setting unrealistic expectations for her. And then Turning Red brought up generational trauma, how the mother was only acting that way because of her mother. And there were so many similarities here with this film. And it was interesting to see another high concept movie, like a film with such a crazy over the top concept. But at the end of the day, it's so simple when you break it down to its core. Whether or not I understood any of it by the end of the fucking movie, though, that's a whole different story. Denise is a lot smarter than me, so she was able to break it down. I was like saying to Denise, like, I don't get it. Like, did you understand it the second time? And she's like, no, I got it the first time. And I was like, all right, well, fuck me.
I can say it like that.
Like, I got it the first time. Oh, God, idiot.
No. Peasant. No. It definitely goes through so many leaps and bounds that it can get confusing. And I think what really helps in having that core center story and message of mother and daughter, it does at least ground it in reality and makes me think about how if the acting style itself was also over the top or more cartoonish, I don't think it would have worked. Like, it had to be grounded in that naturalism for it to balance out all the chaos in the editing and style, yeah.
And without spoiling, because we'll get into spoilers a bit later, because there is a lot to unpack with this movie. But one of the things I did really enjoy is that when the movie does have these conversations, these serious conversations between the mother and daughter, that's where the special effects drop a bit and it becomes a bit more grounded. It gives the audience time to breathe and stuff. There's literally a moment in this film where things come to a screeching halt and you're just like, whoa. Like, if I told someone that that happens in this movie, if I just listed all the things that happen in this movie and told that to someone, they'd be like, no, I don't believe you. That's not in a film that is being released in theaters. They'd be like, that's in a cartoon, but not in a live, like, movie.
Yeah, it makes me think, like, can you imagine the pitch meeting for this? Like, trying to pitch this to a studio. How do you even do that?
It's like, there's going to be a man that's, like, inside out, but he's not. And he's going to learn about redemption because he's a breakdance fighter. And or, that doesn't happen in the movie, but, like, that's an example of some of the shit. Maybe that was in the deleted scenes.
Never know.
Who the fuck
in
knows?
A multiverse somewhere.
Imagine you see an interview with the guys that wrote this and they're just like, ugh, that's nothing. You should have seen what we wanted to put in the movie. Oh Jesus.
Yeah.
So, the plot of this film. What is the plot of this film, Denise? So,
I feel like I can see the struggle.
Okay, oh, so the God. Plot of this film.
Yeah.
This mother, played by Michelle Yeoh, she lives quite a depressing life, boring. She lives with her husband above a laundromat that they own together. They have a daughter. She's in a relationship with another woman. And the mother is very unhappy with her life. It's presented as a monotonous life. She doesn't really fully accept her daughter's relationship with her girlfriend. And they have a grandfather played by James Hong.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe.
James Hong. Fucking love James Hong. I always remember just him as Lopan in Big Trouble in Little China. But he's just phenomenal in this film. I love the faces he makes. How he's just always like irritated all the time, but he fucking nails
it. Yeah, it just works.
Yeah, it works. So entertaining to watch. Anyway, she is approached by another version of her husband from another universe who pretty much tells her that there is this force that wants to destroy the universe. And she is the only hope. She's the only version of her that can really stop this force. And this force is essentially her daughter in other universes. But she's come together as this evil force that, as it appears, she wants to destroy the universe. So, this guy teaches our main character how to jump to other universes, grab the skills from herself in these other universes, and kind of upgrade herself in a way. Similar to The Matrix, how Neo can, like, download a bunch of Kung Fu. I know Kung Fu. He can download skills straight to his brain. It was similar to that. So, the whole movie is essentially her trying to stop her daughter through these other universes. But as she's gaining powers and upgrades and abilities from her other versions. She's actually kind of combining all the universes. So there's a lot of like cutting between the different versions of the main character. And I love the line when the guy explains why she in this universe is like our last hope. He just says so blatantly and so direct. He's like, because you are shit. Like, you are the failure. You are the worst version of you in this universe. Yeah. Like, imagine if... I guess this movie essentially is saying, like, imagine if you could see yourself in other universes. Like, the other ways that your life could have been. And then forcing you to kind of deal with that. Like, if there's a version of you where you were an actor and you never had a family. Or a version where you're an amazing professional chef. Or a version where some other weird stuff happens that we'll get into a bit later. Yeah. Is there anything I'm missing, Denise, without...
Yeah. I mean, I guess it definitely gets you to confront your own reality, which kind of sets her off on her own internal journey as well.
Yeah. There's so much happening. There's themes of like you as a person confronting like what your happiness is in your universe, like trying to work out what's the best version of your life. And whether or not you've lived your life to your maximum potential. Then you've got the relationship between daughter and mother. Then you've got the generational trauma. Then you've got kind of the acceptance that, like, with the present moment, with the simple life usually being kind of the happiest or the best version of your life. Yeah, I think that's all the themes pretty much covered.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that I guess it definitely explores that whole immigrant experience as well, like being that she left her family in China and Hong Kong, I think, to then move to America and how her life just didn't plan out the way that she hoped it would, just disappointment after disappointment. And that's what led her to this, I guess, point where we first meet her and everything's just kind of like passing her by. And
this film has moments where I honestly thought I was going to have an epileptic seizure. I was very close to either having a seizure or vomiting.
My main criticism that comes to mind at first, if I had to criticize it, is that, you know, they definitely need a warning for photosensitive viewers. Like, I don't recall there being a warning at the start, or even like when you were buying tickets, right? There wasn't really a warning on any website.
Yeah, there was no one that was like, be careful. You won't live.
Because there is, a lot visually.
Even you didn't warn me, and you've seen the movie once. And even you were like, oh, you'll love it. You'll have a great time.
You know, it did come to mind. I did think maybe I should warn Michael that it can be a lot visually, but then I forgot I didn't.
Sent me in blind.
Did.
One thing I will say, I laughed out loud a lot of times in this movie. I'm pretty sure I was the loudest person in the theater. 100%. But fuck, it was funny.
Oh, yeah.
Like, some of the shit that this movie sets up, I'm just thinking about it, and I'm like, I can't believe there was, like you said, a pitch meeting, a producer meeting where, all right, we got to invest $20 million. All right, we need $10 million to have dudes put their heads up each other's asses or something like that. Like, imagine going into a boardroom professional meeting with people in suits and being like, look, we got to do this. We want a gangbang of giraffes. We want giraffes gangbanging each other. We need $10 million to do it. This is going to be a great movie. It's going up against Doctor Strange, a Marvel fucking behemoth, and we're going to beat it because we're going to have giraffes gangbang each other.
Not saying that that does happen in the film, but it's like, I would say it's a similar level of ridiculous.
I mean, I'm not that far off, though. I'm really not that far off.
That's it.
Some people might even be like, huh, actually, I would have believed giraffes doing that in this movie. All right, guys. Before we get into the spoilers, I will say it is a good movie. It's fucking a sensation for all senses, really.
All senses, yeah.
I think that if this film was to get an award, it would be for the special effects and for the fight choreography. And the sound design as well. There's a lot of like, boom, oh, yeah, like true. A lot of that shit.
A lot of sound design, yeah.
A lot of subtle nuances in the sound design that really immerse you into it. There's few films that I'll say like to someone, no, you have to make sure you see it in a cinema. I would definitely say with a film like this, you have to see it in a cinema. Do not let this pass you by and just be like, oh, I'll just wait till it comes up on. No, no, no. You'd be doing a huge disservice to yourself. That's like living your life and never going to Disneyland. That's what it would be like to not watch this film in a cinema.
That's so true. Like, considering that it's like an indie film as well, technically, A24, it's like.
I would have never thought this was an indie film.
Right? Because it feels like how well done the visual effects and everything is. You'd think that it had a massive budget, massive scale of production, but like. It's just so, I think, well-crafted and so meticulous. That's what I really love about it, that it feels so detailed. Like, you can feel it and that there's so much thought behind all this. And that's a credit to the team, the Daniels, and everyone who worked on this film.
Yeah, like, to have fight scenes with such fluidity that they flow between multiple scenes. Like, this film feels like Family Guy, in a way. Like, you know how Family Guy has those cutaways?
Yeah.
But imagine if all these random cutaways, right, by the end of a Family Guy episode, all the cutaways meant something, and you actually thought to yourself, oh, they were all planned. Like, they weren't just random cutaways. There was a reason behind everything. That's what this felt like to watch for me.
Yeah. I think at the end, it really makes it a satisfying experience to have, since it does feel like there is no stone unturned. Stone unturned. That'll make sense when you see it.
All right, guys, we're going to get into spoilers now. You've been warned. You can leave, but don't leave. Unless you've watched the film, then you can. Wait, that doesn't make sense.
Just stay. Just stay.
I'm sorry. I'm still processing. That's my excuse. All right. Spoiler alert time. What is the thing that stuck out most to you, Denise?
Oh, my gosh. What is the thing that stuck out most to me? I mean, I freaking love how chaotic it got. I think, like I was saying before to you, before we started filming and recording, I feel like sometimes in my own mind, my own thoughts can get really chaotic. So, watching everything be so, I guess, stimulatory, it's kind of like, oh yeah, this is my mind on screen. So that was kind of satisfying in a way for some reason. Mm. Like, I really appreciate the visual style and all the different practical effects they put into this. If you watched a lot of the interviews and stuff, there's a lot of practical effects that just make it feel so real, that jumping between the different realities just like has an extra touch. Like, you'd see Deirdre, like when she's fighting Michelle Yeoh, one of the first few times, and she grabs her, but in the other reality, you see the hand come up at the, like, in the car window, that kind of thing. Every time there'd be something tying it in. So I really enjoyed that visually.
I don't know if I enjoyed it visually, but I laughed my ass off at a fight scene between Michelle Yeoh and two men with something stuck up their ass. Like a dildo-shaped object up their ass. It's definitely original.
Like, it's a brilliant setup as well. The fact that they-
And they stay up there, the whole fight scene as well, which is incredible.
And how it's even, like, introduced that it's, like, oh, an award for best auditor of the month. And it's, like, an anal plug. Like,
and as soon as you saw it, you fucking knew that it was going to be used somewhere involving an asshole. I didn't know how, but I knew this dick-shaped object had to be used further down the track. Like, they were planting a seed, a dick-shaped seed. I just fucking...
Right, just like, again, like, how did this... It felt like they really pushed the boundary where they could. It really does make you think, what got rejected? What didn't make the cut? Because, like...
Did anything get rejected? Did anything get rejected? That's a question.
Yeah.
Seeing a mother and daughter have a conversation as rocks, but not like talking, but just as rocks, was pretty good. Didn't think I wanted to see it in a movie. I would have never asked for it. if someone told me, what do you want to see in a fucking movie? I would never say to someone, two rocks talking to each other through subtitles. But yet, the way the film was going, like the chaos of this film, I actually enjoyed seeing two rocks talk to each other because I was dying for a breather.
And I think that's where it was so like meticulously planned, you know, like they did that definitely for a very specific impact. What I loved about that scene in particular too with the two rocks was that even though like visually, right, it's so simple. Two rocks, a cliff, the sky, the sound of like the wind blowing, but they were saying to each other was so deep.
And the crowd were really into it. They were laughing at everything they were saying to each other.
I think that's really, really clever use of like technique. Like,
yeah, really good writing in that they nail the dynamic of the relationship. So it does feel like it is these characters, but just as rocks. And it's still getting across everything of what their relationship is. Phenomenal. I said to you, Denise, like, I feel like 30 different people wrote this. And when I saw two names, I was like, get fucked. Fuck off. Two people wrote this shit. Fuck off. This was like a team of fucking writers. This was a building, a skyscraper full of writers. Just like, did you ever see South Park when they make fun of Family Guy? And they said that the writing team of Family Guy were these manatees that would put these balls together. And the balls had different verbs and nouns and shit into this kind of like path. And they would line up the balls and that would be the cutaways.
Oh, right.
Because they're essentially saying that like they generate these cutaways out of random shit. And I feel like this film has, yeah, like I said, it has that. But yet, it still all comes together, which is fucking an astonishing achievement in itself.
It's a massive feat. And to also think, this is their second film, I believe.
Well, I feel much better about myself now. Fucking hell. This film makes an analogy like, oh, like one of the characters is trying to explain to someone else, like, okay, what's happening right now is like that movie Ratatouille, like how the rat is controlling someone else and helping him cook. But then they take that and they're like, what if it was a raccoon instead of a rat? And then they actually do it.
Yeah.
They actually have a raccoon helping a chef cook.
It's so, I love it so much because it's like, it all stems from the fact that for her, like the character Evelyn that Michelle plays, like she doesn't even remember the name right. She calls it Raccoonie. I think that's
right. Oh, yeah,
but
that's
the fact
right.
that they actually pay that off by showing that it exists somewhere. Just trying to imagine that writer's room with these guys and how they even got all these different ideas. You know, it's just.
They're manatees.
It's wild for sure. How it worked.
So, I wasn't clear on the rules of this world, though, because it seemed to be like the Matrix. And so, there's one universe that knows about this being.
The
what did they call
her?
Not Bukkake.
This is where I'd love to Google as well what this. Oh, God. Okay, sorry. I'm surprised they didn't use that as a line because Evelyn could have easily got it wrong and said Bukkake.
I don't know what anyone's names in this movie was. All I knew was like James Hong, Michelle Yeoh. Like when you said Evelyn, I was like, oh, okay, that's her fucking name. I was like, and Evelyn. It's just because this premise is so fucking wild that you don't remember names with the shit that's happening in
You're
this movie.
Just trying to follow what's happening.
Just
right?
trying to survive.
They called the great evil Tabaki.
Oh, so I wasn't too far off.
No, you definitely weren't far off. But
Tabaki,
Bukkake. Exactly. But that's where, you know, I'm thinking that's so specific and odd as well. It's like, what does that actually mean? Where is it from? But then again, if it is just some made up words or a made up name, that speaks part of the message as well. Like, when everything is chaos, why does it matter? Like, something can be random. And kind of like, that's the point.
I was very lost with, okay, so this evil being, what is the evil being's plan, Denise? Because I was very lost at times with what its plan was. I thought it was to destroy all versions of Evelyn, but then it turns out it isn't that.
Yeah.
And that's when I was starting to get lost.
Oh, I see. So I think what it ended up being was that Joy, and this version of her, Jobu Tabaki, was looking for the version of Evelyn that could actually meet her halfway, that would actually join her in sharing the experience. And funny enough, I think this is where it was made the most clear, in the scene with the rocks. And I think that's where it's like, if you get caught up in the humor, that might just go over your head kind of thing. Like, it's easy because it's such an important point. I think it speaks to that whole mother-daughter relationship. Sometimes when you have that strain, you really just want your parent to just understand you, to be able to empathize. And so once this version of Evelyn was willing to do that, to risk it all and fracture her mind, just like this version of Joy was experiencing, that's where I think this Jobu Tabaki was trying to achieve. Like, you get me now kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, she wanted a version of her mum to just get her, I think.
But then what did the bagel mean? So she wanted her to go into this black hole of nothingness. Like, Joy wanted Evelyn to pretty much go into this black hole of nothingness, in a way, go into that. What was that about?
I think it was like, because this version of Joy is always constantly experiencing everything in every version of herself within the many realities, it's like when you experience so much, it just feels like nothing matters, right? Mm. So I think when she came to that conclusion, she thought that, you know, if this is just going to be endless suffering anyway, if life is suffering, I might as well end it because then I'll finally find peace.
Mm.
So it's kind of like, I think that her character already came to that point, but then her last mission that she wanted to achieve was to find a version of her mum that could understand that as well. And if that version of her mum, having experienced the same thing, could understand it, then maybe she'd agree that all that's left is to end your suffering, to end your life.
Okay.
And she was hoping that the mum would find something different, maybe, that would tell her there was a way out.
So, Tabaki.
Yeah, let's call it Tabaki.
Tabaki wanted the one version of her mum that could empathize with her and understand her to experience what it's like to have everything, everywhere, all at once. And then when she does experience that, she's pretty much saying, all right, now that you know what it's like, you know why we both need to kind of end it and go into this black hole of nothingness, which could maybe mean suicide.
Yeah.
Essentially. And then when her mother gets close to this, or when she does experience this, rather than doing that, she decides it's best to empathize with her daughter through the fact that they're both experiencing the same shit now. And that's pretty much where the ending comes.
Yeah. Because I think Evelyn even gets towards the same conclusion too, because she starts to go down a bit of a spiral in all the realities where everything kind of turns to shit as well. And so she starts to also feel that pain and anger and frustration until there's a turning point where the husband and father, Waymond, kind of like gives her, I think, an understanding of how, even though they're different, like, there are still ways around things if you choose kindness and you choose to find the glimmers of hope. And that's where she, I think, begins to shift and then try to bring her daughter back.
Yeah, because the giant bagel. Because her husband, what was her husband's name?
Waymond.
Waymond. Weird name. Her husband, Waymond, enjoys the world that they're in because he's got her. Like, he's found his happiness. What Evelyn sees as like a shitty life, that it's a laundromat and it's unsuccessful, is still like ultra happiness to him because he has his wife, his daughter. Like, he loves the simplicity of his life.
He's able to still find the optimism in things. Yeah.
And once she started to kind of see that happiness, that joy from him, she started to see her own happiness, her own positive outlook on her own life, which then helped her to kind of question and be like, oh, there is more to life. I don't need to go into the black hole of nothingness and I need to stop my daughter. But then there was a moment when the daughter was like, can't you just leave me to go? And she decides to leave her to go to the black hole. And then she decides, no, I'm not going to let her go.
Yeah, that part's interesting, hey, because I remember watching it the first time. I thought to myself, oh, maybe this is how they actually tie up this relationship, that maybe they're saying if the relationship is toxic, you can just leave it and cut ties. But then I think the direction they went in that was interesting was that the mother, Evelyn, starts saying, you know, even in all of this mess, you still came looking for me. Almost says that even though we have this damage between us, deep, deep down, like, you still want to have this connection.
Mm.
And then it's almost like she says to her, like, because you have that hope of wanting this connection, it's worthwhile that we try.
Yeah, it was like they were toying with that idea of, like, oh, if you really love this person, you'll let them go, set them free to, like, work things out on themselves. But then it came back to, oh, but I need to fight for her and show her how much I care about her, which I guess makes sense because at the start of the movie, you don't feel like the mum really cares or loves her daughter. But by the end, like, fuck. Although this movie's very, like, it seems very complicated, the arc of the character and the lesson that they need to learn is clear to the audience. Whereas, like, a film like Inception, I don't actually know. It was a bit more complicated with the with the way it dealt with the character arc. Like, it wasn't so clear, which I think is maybe why I thought a movie like Inception was a lot more complicated. And there was so much to keep up with.
And that ending was, like, ambiguous too, right? They ended it quite ambiguously where I think I've read somewhere where it's like you don't really know if what you were watching was the dream or reality.
Because they have totems, like these things that help them understand if they're in the real world or not. And Leo DiCaprio had like a dreidel or something and he was spinning it and it kept spinning. It didn't stop. And that's how you kind of thought, oh, he's still in that dream world. This film just feels like it does borrow a lot from films like The Matrix and Inception. It's almost, in a way, a spiritual successor. Like, this felt more like the fourth Matrix movie, more so than The Matrix 4 did. Like, it gives you something new, but it would make sense within the world of The Matrix. It's a shame that The Matrix 4 was fucking trash. I tried reviewing that movie fucking, like, twice.
Yeah, and it just...
I just got to a point where I was like, you know what? Everyone knows it's shit. There's nothing to report on. Does this have a
purpose? Yeah. I think it's quite interesting that how they end the film, it almost gives you that sense that even though things aren't perfect and probably, like, can never be perfect because realistically, perfect doesn't exist, at least you can still hold on to the good times and what the things still to be grateful and hopeful for. Mm. I think that's the end message I got.
Yeah, like the message was very clear of like, although your life could have gone a million different ways, sometimes you need to just stay present with what your life is rather than thinking about what it could have been. And I'm amazed that I was able to get something simple and profound from it because when I was watching it, I was just like, where are we? What's happening? Who's that guy? What's happening now? Why is there a raccoon on this dude's head? Why is there dildos up these two guys' asses while they're fighting this chick? But it's all there.
At the end of it.
I actually do want to, like, as I'm talking about it more, I'm like, oh my God, I would love to watch this again with someone else to see their reactions while watching this movie. Like, that would be fun just to, like, film a theater reaction to this movie.
Yeah. It's definitely, compared to other films, like, sometimes, like, you can really tell when a joke hits or misses. And with this, you could really grasp, like, I don't think there would ever be a silent audience for this film.
No. One of the things I was going to ask you is, since you saw Multiverse of Madness with Doctor Strange...
Yes.
And you've seen this film twice. Like, both films deal with multiverses, so it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on what you felt was more original. Did you feel multiverse was quite safe in comparison? I mean, everything feels safe in comparison to this movie.
Yeah, it is very interesting because now this is the second time I'm watching it, but I also watched Doctor Strange. I think it was just like two nights ago. So that's still pretty fresh. And I'm trying to think how to express it without spoiling anything. I feel like this film definitely takes a more sci-fi path of explaining it, which I think is fun because without the graphics, because they even show us the little devices they have showing the mind map so we can kind of get it visually. Mm. But in Marvel, they kind of go that route of, you know, almost magic. And chaos magic, they even call it too. But even with these two, like, I think of Rick and Morty, and that did Multiverse ages ago as well.
That's a film. That's something I totally forgot to bring up, was Rick and Morty.
And so, I feel like we really are getting inundated with this whole multiverse concept as well recently, in recent years. I do think that both, I guess, explorations of the concept are different, but, like, unique in their own ways. But out of my own bias, I do think that it was well-crafted and more well-done in this, for some reason, than Doctor Strange.
No, that's fair. I mean, there's so many other variables with a Marvel film.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to watch 20 other movies to fucking understand it. This film, like, for what it does, and I don't think a film like this is going to make a sequel. I don't really think,
It's necessary.
No, it's not necessary. It's wrapped up in a tight little bow, whereas, obviously, Multiverse of Madness has to set up the next 20 fucking phases of Marvel movies, so...
It's interesting, because I think after seeing this first, and then if you go see Doctor Strange after, you'll kind of feel like, oh, yeah, like, the stuff that I think they try to make feel unique or visually cool with the multiverse exploration, you kind of feel like you get a lot of that already in this, so then when you see it in Doctor Strange, it's like, oh, yeah, but it doesn't really hit you in, like, a special way?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, is that multiverse is going to feel quite safe and tame compared to this film. Like, this film feels like Coke. I'm thinking that multiverse is going to be like Coke Zero or Diet Coke or fucking Coke No Sugar. Yeah, Coke Zero.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm pretty good with that. Is there anything else?
I don't know, man. I mean, like, I just, overall, I really love the film. Like, I think in years to come, I might rewatch it again. Like I said, like, watching it the second time, I loved it. Even though I knew what was coming, I still loved it. Watching the interviews especially, I feel like it's almost the gift that keeps on giving because there's just so much in it. And I think when you look into, like, what the actors say about their own process, playing so many characters and stuff as well, you can just tell that I think the whole production, everyone really enjoyed, and there was so much heart and so much thought put into it, and it carries through.
Nice, nice. Oh, I'm going to give my final rating. I'm going to give Anything Everywhere All at Once. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. It's a fucking feast for the senses. A very unique film. A film that I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever see a film that, like, will keep me guessing as much as this film did and feel so original or shock me so much or leave me feeling dizzy and disoriented like this film did. It was an absolute shocker of a movie, but it was enjoyable. And underneath, like, in the core of it, were characters I enjoyed seeing, actors that I love seeing, special effects that were chaotic at times and yet hilarious. Like, that raccoon is practical.
Yeah, exactly.
And, but it's like, it looks shit, but on purpose, it's fucking perfect. It's funny.
Yeah, dude.
And I feel I'm looking forward to showing this movie to more people. I'm looking forward to just having conversations with people. Like, what was your reaction when blank happened? So, that's my final rating. Denise, did you give a final rating?
Not yet, no. My final rating would have to be 4.5. And I'm only taking I think it hit me on so many different levels and resonated in so many ways and was so nuanced in, you know, showing the whole thing from a mother's perspective as well, like we were saying, which felt really nuanced, and she felt like a, you know, a real human being rather than just a tiger mom stereotype. Yeah, I'm only taking a 0.5 off because I feel like it definitely should come with a warning and a caution for photosensitive people. And definitely if older audiences go to watch it, like, I worry as well, because it is a lot. But
like, when you say older, you mean like elderly?
Elderly. Yeah, because it definitely is, like, it leaves no stone unturned, and it's a lot, and will take time to process. And so it's not for the faint of heart. That's what I was saying.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks for joining us again, Denise. I'm going to go and meditate and try and come back to reality. Guys, if you enjoyed the show, leave us a review and like and subscribe on the YouTube channel at Michael Piccinieri. You can follow my Instagram at Michael Pish Podcasting. Give me a like there. You can leave a review of the podcast if you enjoyed it. Show us some love because we want other people to listen to the show. So help a brother out. Cool. All right. Catch you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Movies Worth Seeing. Make sure to like and share the show and leave a review. You can follow us on Instagram at Michael Pish Podcasting and watch movie reviews, audience reaction videos, and other fun content on our YouTube channel at Michael Piccinieri.